Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection this week with our friend and a man I much admire, Chris Churchill of the Albany Times Union, an excellent columnist, if there ever was one. Chris, you've been writing an awful lot about Andrew Cuomo and making certain predictions. I wanna ask you this. You said you found Cuomo's speech yesterday, his State of the State speech, exhausting. Well, of course, I'm not going to confess that in the beginning part I may have taken a small nap. But by the time the crescendo came up at the end, as Danny Kaye would say, the crescendo, it was a spellbinder. And if anybody had any doubt that this guy was running for president of the United States, goodbye doubts.
You think so? Yeah. Well, yeah, it did kind of have that feel at times. And it was long. I mean, there were a few different times where I thought he was heading towards the kind of the grand finale, only to have him kind of pivot back into what seemed to be the middle of the speech. It was 92 minutes, I think, is what it was. Something like that.
Yeah. It was huge.
Yeah.
But what about my assertion that this is a guy, now he has two New Yorkers he's running against who are going to take the air out of his sails. One of them is Kirsten Gillibrand, who is the junior senator who a lot of people are thinking would like to be the first woman president of the United States. And the second, of course, is Mayor de Blasio in New York City. Now, he can beat the hell out of Mayor de Blasio and has been in a most unseemly way, in my opinion, because he's a potential primary opponent. And in fact, we know de Blasio has those interests. He's term limited, and he's been spending time out in places like Iowa, of all places. A sure indication he may be running for president of the United States.
Isn't that interesting? I always think it's so fascinating that all these guys happen to go to Iowa. And
right.
They say they want to take their message on the road and bring it to the American people, but there's only one state they go to. Well, doesn't anybody ever go to Montana to bring their message to the American people?
Well, they do go to New Hampshire.
Yeah, occasionally New Hampshire, too. Yeah.
Right. So, what do you make of his chances to be president of the United States?
I think they're very slim. Very, very slim. I mean, you never know. You know, nobody thought Trump would be president, obviously. So
exactly.
you never know. But I don't think his person, after Trump, I think people will be looking for a little bit more of a soothing person, somebody's a little bit less. His style is very similar to Trump's in a lot of ways. And I think people will be really tired of that if they're not already. I think you can make a pretty good case that every president is in some ways a reaction to the previous president. And it's very rare for the American people to elect presidents with very similar personalities back to back.
And yet, Chris, we had a Vox Pop program right after he gave the speech, and we didn't have that much time. We took four or five calls, and every single one of them said, thank God for Andrew Cuomo coming in and carrying the cudgels against the evil Trump. That's in blue state New York, of course.
Yeah, and that might work here. I just whether or not that will work nationally is a different story. And you know, that the message that he... the kind of us versus the federal government message or us versus Washington message that he delivered yesterday is pretty much the same message that all the potential presidential candidates would be giving. So I don't know that will differentiate him in a field full of, you know, Kirsten Gillibrand or Elizabeth Warren and Bill de Blasio, I guess, too.
Yes. Now, de Blasio he can beat up on, but Kirsten Gillibrand he has a big problem with, after all.
Yeah, I would think so. It's whenever there's three people from the same state in the field, that's the complicating factor. I mean, they'll be vying for some of the same donors, presumably. That's not going to be easy for any of them, actually. It's possible they all cancel each other out.
Especially, that's true. I saw it happen with Rockefeller and Lindsay. I'm that old, and I know that can happen. But the thing with Kirsten Gillibrand, unlike de Blasio, he can be really mean to de Blasio, and nobody's going to accuse him of sexism. But when Gillibrand has been carrying the feminist banner, you know, and sexual harassment. He starts beating up on her, and he could face a real problem.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That is complicated for him. He is somebody who can be bullying, obviously, and somebody who can be nasty. And I think people do perceive it differently sometimes when you're being nasty to a female politician than to a male politician.
Well, Chris, we who follow this governor pretty assiduously mm-hmm. know that he is not the nicest guy in the whole world. But the people outside of the Albany orbit don't know that. And when they hear a guy going after Trump the way that he did in the speech, which I thought was a very strong speech, especially at the end.
Yeah, I will say that, too. I thought it was a good speech. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I did think on the whole, there was a lot to like in that speech. And it was a better speech than I've heard Andrew Cuomo give in quite some time, or maybe ever. He didn't yell at us, which he tends to do. You know, when he gets to that crescendo part, he starts screaming at everybody, and it kind of went, like I said on a column a few days ago, it kind of feels like if you're listening, it feels like you're being berated. You know, I think he's trying to be inspirational, but it comes off differently. But he didn't do that yesterday, and there were some kind of emotional high points. You know, he introduced the brother of Kalief Browder, who's I think most people are probably familiar with the tragic story of Kalief. So Cuomo introduced his brother as he introduced some criminal justice proposals. At the end, he was kind of human in the speech. He talked about turning 60, and he was funny at times. It was a very long speech, and it could certainly have used a good editor. But on the whole, it was actually a pretty decent speech.
No, I thought it was a good speech. Yeah. Let me ask you this. It was clear to me. Look, he can't run for a fourth term, right? I mean, we're thinking about now his third term, mm-hmm. but a fourth term, that's where his father went down. There's just so much New Yorkers will stand. So he knows if he has to continue his career, it's going to be obvious that he has to be running for president.
Yeah, that's an interesting. You're probably right about that. There is you do kind of get tired of a person after a certain point. Of course, you could flip that on its head too and say, well, one of the things that people might kind of react to is the fact that he's running for president, and if he runs for president and loses, then when he runs for governor the fourth time, people kind of say, well, this guy, you know, he's not really even interested in the job, you know. So, you know, that can go both ways. But you're probably right. I mean, four terms is pretty extraordinary.
You know, I wrote a column not that long ago, after I saw the wonderful movie The King's Speech, in which the king, who stuttered of England during the Second World War, was taught how to speak and did so to great applause. Andrew Cuomo speaks with a heavy, heavy Queens accent. So I wrote a column called The Governor's Speech, meaning he should get somebody like that who cleans him up a little bit, like his brother Christopher. They came out of the same family and the rest of it. Christopher doesn't talk that way, but the governor insists on doing it. How are they going to take that in Iowa?
Well, the old theory used to be that a New Yorker could really never win through the primary system, just because people in Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina tended to find the New York personality off-putting. Maybe Trump has disproved that a little bit. Trump is a New Yorker too. He has a similar accent. He has a similar attitude. It could be that Trump's just an unusual case, but it is kind of amusing to imagine Cuomo out in Iowa trying to milk cows and kiss babies and do all the stuff that the caucus requires of you.
I would take some issue. Both of those guys are queens,
yeah.
Trump and Cuomo. And by the way, I see plenty of similarities between the two guys in terms of their approach to politics, arrogance, and the other things. However, you know, Trump's accent is not classic Queens. It's more arrogant Queens.
Yeah.
Do you understand the difference?
Yeah, I do. Do you think the average person in Iowa gets that difference, though? I mean, I think, heck, I went to school in Texas, and I moved there from the Boston area. And, you know, when I spoke, people couldn't tell if I was from New York, Boston, Philadelphia. It didn't matter. The people out west, they all sound the same. But I get your point. I mean, Cuomo's accent is... it's uniquely Cuomian too. I don't know. There have been rumors that he's been trying to lose that accent, but if you it doesn't seem as though that effort has been very successful, if that's what's been happening.
Well, out in Texas, all you have to do is say y'all a lot.
Yeah. And slow down. Everyone thought I talked way too quickly. That was the thing everyone always said to me.
Well, anytime you're trying to get a foreign language, it always sounds like they're speaking too quickly. So he called. One of the complicated things about the Cuomo speech is he called for changing the tax code. Maybe that's when my eyelids were getting heavy. But how much of that did you understand?
Not very much of it, to be honest. I need to look into that. It was a little bit complicated. I don't think I would doubt that most people understood what he was talking about. He did also talk about suing the federal government.
Yeah, good luck, Charlie.
Yeah. There might be a case on constitutional grounds that the getting rid of the SALT deduction is unconstitutional. I'm not, it's probably a hard case to make, but
what would the case be that this is fooling with the state's rights?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
It's basically the federal government saying that they have first dibs on the money. You could potentially make a constitutional argument there that might work, but it seems like a long shot.
And he talked about the changing it from the income tax to the payroll tax system.
Yeah.
I must say, as a non-sophisticated person, I didn't quite get what that would involve. But I know that you're going to be looking into that and letting us know, right? I mean, that's
I hope to. I mean, it's hard. You know, he wasn't very specific. He kind of said something along the lines of, you know, this is something we're going to have to explore and work through and kind of figure out together. He was pretty vague about the whole thing, I thought. But he certainly, I mean, you know, it was like we said, there's a lot of components to the speech. But I actually thought that was one of the times when he was most animated, interestingly enough, is when he was talking about the tax reform and what it might mean for New York. I mean, we've seen over the last month or something that this is something that has genuinely made him angry. And,
well, it should. He's got a $4.5 billion deficit in his deficit hole in his budget, and he doesn't quite know what to do about that, right? I mean, some things are predictable.
Yeah, but it's a little bit hard. It's a little hard, or at least unclear, I think, to know how federal tax reform is going to impact the state's coffers. I mean, there is the potential that more people will leave New York, you know, as a result of not having their state and local deduction available to them anymore. But people have been leaving New York for a long time for that reason. So will it accelerate it? Maybe. But it's just hard to know.
Fascinating. Because how do you see him making up that deficit? Now, we hear from a lot of people that half of that will be easy. You just tell the state agencies not to spend that much.
Mm-hmm.
And you could probably make half of it up. But then he's got some more billions to worry about. This is a guy who told local governments that they couldn't increase taxes to support services. And if he takes services away by starving his agencies, that may really be crisis time.
Yeah, he didn't really address that yesterday at all. I mean, most of what he talked about seemed to be things that would cost more money. You know, he talked about some big infrastructure projects in New York City. He talked about kind of other programs and things that would add to the state spending. He didn't talk much at all about, you know, ways to reduce spending, and that will be a challenge. I mean, you know, there are forces that are pushing for more spending in education and lots of other places, and I don't know where they get that money.
You know, one of the things he's been emphasizing lately is criminal justice reform.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know that that's a very popular thing with New York's middle class, but it sure is a progressive item that people who might challenge him from a left-wing perspective in a primary might be paying attention to. Yes or no?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. I mean, if you looked at that speech yesterday, you could make the case that he was more worried about a challenge from the left than a challenge from a Republican. I mean, most, you know, the sure. theme of the day was progressive, right? Everything was about being progressive, and New York's progressive, and things like criminal justice reform, things like expanding voting rights. I mean, these are good things, but these are things that you would probably you do hear some conservatives talk about criminal justice reform too. But that would certainly not be the theme of a Republican gubernatorial campaign.
Now, listen, Chris Churchill, star columnist for the Albany Times Union. You know, it occurs to me here that Cuomo really worked hard on this speech of his. There must have been a lot of people called in. I know that the agencies all say, okay, what good stuff have you done this year? And then he mentions it all. One of the things that I found interesting is, because you never know what's going to take off or not, there is a certain amount of resentment against my old friend Mario Cuomo's name being attached to the Tappan Zee Bridge.
Yeah.
Is that quieting down now, or do you think that resentment goes on?
No, I think that resentment goes on. I think that struck a lot of people as just kind of symptomatic of the arrogance of the administration. I mean, you know, it'd be one thing if it was just kind of this grassroots groundswell of people who wanted that name on the bridge. But when you put your own family's name on the bridge, on a, you know, a bridge that already has a name, by the way,
yep.
It strikes people as
bullying,
and just, it's inappropriate, to be honest. It's just, it's ego gratification.
Let's talk procurement. One of the things that angers me personally the most about Cuomo, I think it's scandalous and shameful, is the fact that he took the pre-audit function along with his, his groupies in the legislature away from Tom DiNapoli, I think probably the best of the public servants in state government today. And now we're facing these trials. Mm. And there are those who believe that if he hadn't taken the procurement audits away, that none of this stuff could have happened. There are those people who say, yes, it could have. There are those people who say, no, it couldn't have. But it's certainly like chicken soup, couldn't have hurt, right?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. One of the things he talked about yesterday was the new arena for the Islanders out on Long Island, part of the Belmont Park redevelopment.
Yeah.
And that project is having some of the same complaints and issues that, you know, that led to these corruption trials. There are people saying that one company said that the bidding seemed to be designed to favor one company over all the others. There are allegations.
Do you think?
Yeah. There are allegations about campaign contributions. It just seems like, you know, the negative sides of the Cuomo administration just go on and on. The kind of the ethical predicaments and the ethical kind of questions that keep getting raised.
But you know, Chris, he hasn't been named personally as benefiting from the corruption allegations that his top lieutenants are. One can only wonder whether he shouldn't be held responsible for having picked them, even if he didn't have anything to do with benefiting from these allegations.
I think he did benefit. I mean, they're talking a lot about campaign contributions.
Yes, you're right.
So, I mean, that is a direct benefit. I mean, they haven't, you're right in the sense that he has not really been directly named. It's always been associates of his, but, you know, the ultimate goal always seemed to be raising money for future campaigns. And that's, you know, that's certainly the bid rigging allegation here in Albany. That, I mean, that was largely seemed to be about campaign contributions.
You make a very good point, and I should have thought about that earlier before I questioned you about that, but you really are on the money on that one. Now, there is this famous group of self-serving Democrats. I call them the traitors. The Independent Democratic Conference, which has been making whoopee with the, that's the best way to say it, with the Republicans and keeping them in power. Many people think because Andrew Cuomo allows it.
Yeah.
But he says he's for everybody getting back together. There are those people who think he's full of cow dung on that if he wanted it done, he could have done it. He could have gotten the eight Democratic senators to come back where they belong in the with the regular Democrats.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think he could have if he had wanted to. I think it benefited him to have a split legislature. And I think, you know, he was kind of Machiavellian and kind of able to play both sides off each other a little bit. And I, you know, it has allowed him to be able to say to progressives who want to see more progressive legislation that, well, there's only so much I can do. I have, you know, a state Senate controlled by Republicans. But I think you're right. I think he could have, if he had really wanted to, he could have ended it.
Well, now, Chris Churchill, one of the things that the governor's people got mad at me for a while back is I wrote an article suggesting that Andrew Cuomo was a great student of Machiavelli. And they seemed to think that it was an anti-Italian slur. No, on the contrary, I'm a great fan of Machiavelli. I think he really understood the way things were. I think he knew all about satire. You just used the word Machiavelli. Do you want to want to apologize?
No, I think it's pretty fair. They both happen to be Italian, but that's about the extent of that. Cuomo is good at what he does in the sense that he's very good at playing different groups off each other and seems to always be a chess move or two ahead of the competition. And I don't know if he's read Machiavelli or not, but, you know.
He may have read Mario.
Yeah, maybe.
Mario used to say to me, Alan, he said, the bad politicians think one move at a time. The good ones think six moves ahead. If he does this, then I'll do this. Then he does that, I'll do that.
And Andrew, he grew up in politics. He knows what he's, sure. He knows it. So it's not surprising in a sense that he's good at it. This has been his world since he was a teenager.
And now, Chris Churchill, we come to the fact that, there's a real move on by the Democrats to flip the United States Congress. Cuomo has announced a hit list of about five or six Republican congressmen in New York State. He wants to, quote, take out. That's my quote, not his. Take out. What are his chances here?
I think probably pretty good. I mean, it sure seems like a blue wave is coming. I mean, there are some districts where it'll be easier than others. But I do think that barring unforeseen circumstances that a blue wave is coming, you usually see the opposition party pick up seats in a midterm election anyways.
Yep.
And Trump is obviously very unpopular. So the conditions are certainly right for that. And New York being a blue state, it would make sense that it would happen more easily here than in a lot of other places.
And if Andrew can take those people out, that'll be a big boost to his national aspirations, wouldn't it?
It would be. And, you know, this blue wave, it's interesting. It seems to be keeping pretty good Republicans from jumping in at all. I mean, just last week, Harry Wilson, who a lot of people saw, including myself, as kind of maybe the best chance to upset Cuomo, announced that he would not run for governor. And I would be willing to bet that his worries about a blue wave and, you know, just that wave swamping even the best Republican candidates was a pretty big factor in his decision.
Cuomo, more than anybody else, he always says one thing, but we think does another. He's always been talking about taking money out of politics, reforming the LLC provisions. But in fact, he's one of the great practitioners of all of that.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And that's why it rings a little bit hollow when he says stuff like that. And I think he touched on that pretty briefly yesterday in the speech. But that's another way that he's kind of played the system pretty masterfully. I mean, he has amassed an intimidating war chest, and it's keeping candidates like Harry Wilson from challenging him.
And how about Cuomo and the press? How you doing? I mean, I know you're much more in touch with them than I am. Are they giving you your due, or are they eschewing contacts?
I think they've pretty much decided that I'm someone they're not going to deal with for the most part. But yeah, I'm not a typical LCA reporter, you know. But they do not have a great relationship with the press, generally speaking. They haven't exactly called the press the enemy of the people, but there is a Trump-like relationship with the media within the Cuomo administration.
We're out of time. Our guest has been Chris Churchill, great columnist for the Albany Times Union, whose columns are published on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. You can get them online. Chris, thanks so much for joining us. It's always wonderful to have you here. You're a thoughtful, insightful, and guiding force for me and for so many others. Thanks for doing it.
Oh, thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.